Hello, and welcome to the Silverfish Podcast. On today's show, we have Connor Casey discussing the needs for state labor archives.
Why don't we introduce ourselves again?
Okay.
My name is Carl Eckler. I'm a graduate student in the Library Sciences program here at the University of Washington. I'm here with Connor Casey, who is?
I am Connor Casey, labor archivist for the Labor Archives of Washington State, which is part of the Special Collections Department in the University of Washington Libraries.
Tell me more about your project. What is it? Why is it important?
Well, we just hit the six-month mark, and I think what it is similar to the answer to why it's important, which is that the labor community saw this as an opportunity to fund a position to gain access and to gain the acceptance of their collections. There had been the inability to take in new collections for a brief period of time in special collections. It was mostly due to budgetary and staff reasons. That's presented an opportunity to the Harry Bridges chair, which happened to be Jim Gregory at that time, and the Harry Bridges Center for Labor Studies at University of Washington. He thought, well, why not have the labor, community come together and fund a position? And he pitched the idea to the special collections in the library. To their credit, they saw this as an opportunity too. And it's sort of a unique setup. I don't know of too many other things like this that are directly funded community archivist positions. I think in some repositories, there actually are particular union archivists for union collections. But I think in those cases, it's often primarily labor archives. And this is sort of a chance to fund a position within an existing special collections, which is the labor archives. They created the Labor Archives of Washington State, but at the same time be tied in with the overall collections. And so that presents a kind of a unique opportunity for researchers in that there can almost be this dialogue that goes on between the different collections. So you'll have the union and then you'll have the employer's records under the same roof. And you might also have the records of a labor critic or opponent who was actively trying to union bust, as well as other organizations that might have supported the workers in their strike action, bargaining, boycotts, whatever. So it's really an opportunity for people who are interested in all aspects of labor history to kind of come there. And we don't have all sides in every single collection, but many of them do have the counterpoint. And so I'm sort of the steward of the labor-related collections, but there's also other collections within special collections that will help insert that awareness as well.
Where do you see the project in 5 years?
Well, as of now, we're 6 months into the first three-year phase, and for now, we're mostly doing a fundraising model. My contract is for 3 years, and we're hoping to make it indefinite, but it's the whole way this came together was that they secured funding, a matching grant for the International Longshore and Warehouse Union's Longshore Division, $50,000 a year, which gets triggered when we raise $50,000 on our own. Initially, there was also a pledge of money from the Washington State Labor Council, which is now lending its efforts in our fundraising pledge to try to get the word out for labor education. And as well as $10,000 for the Harry Bridges Center for Labor Studies, which receives money from another stream and devotes it to this. So right now we're sort of periodically trying to fundraise. I'm also trying to write grants to offset some of the costs. And if it turns out it is only 3 years, to try to increase my impact as much as possible while I'm here. But I think the idea about the long-term strategy is to do a mix of different size endowments, which would honor different labor people, labor history people, or people in the community, as well as trying to pursue a strategy to try to get some funds in a different way. And the overall idea is to make this project as long-term as possible. And within Special Collections, there seems to be a great deal of support for the project. That's very great because it wouldn't go far if it was just lip service. And they've really put their money where their mouth is. They've helped support me with a lot of equipment and time from other people in the department. And to his credit, the dean really wants to make this go on. So hopefully we'll be able to do that. And that's one of the reasons why I've been trying to set a pretty aggressive pace in terms of my activities is because when I can show that advisory board after 6 months of work, how much I've been able to accomplish, that can then fuel our fundraising efforts, because we could say, well, look, this guy's only been here for 6 months and he's done this much. Could you imagine what would happen if we funded him for another couple of years? It looks like now we're in good shape for at least another 3 years, which will make the project probably total about 4 years.
And as a result of your work, what's going to be the impact as far as a researcher in the area of labor studies? I mean, what additional tools and areas of access would they have access to as a result of this particular work?
Well, my first phase really coming here was I was trying to concentrate on creating daylighting, really highlighting and daylighting the collections that exist in labor history already. So to that end, I created a there's a Labor Archives of Washington State website within the special collections, but there's also a topical labor collections listing, which breaks it down in terms of labor organizations that are, I'm defining those as collective bargaining agents for employees, so straight unions sort of. And there's also labor unionists and supporters. Often union officers or members will walk with the organization's records. So that's both a good documentation of different labor activists' personal papers, but also sometimes organizational records, which have walked with those different people. There's also a list of different labor supporting organizations, for example, the ACLU or just other sort of things that impact labor, equal rights organizations. And then other ones that aren't really part of the labor archives, but are it's aimed at trying to orient researchers and trying to figure out other related collections, which includes the employers, labor critics and opponents, those kind of things, union busters. Sometimes those collections actually have surprising information on the labor unions if you take them with a grain of salt. Sometimes there's labor spy reports that have better recon on certain organizations than we have. So that didn't exist. I mean, didn't survive. Doesn't exist anymore. So that's the first stage, which is just highlighting the existing collections that were in special collections. I also am in the middle of a very long and intense collection survey to determine the levels of processing in the existing collections, their preservation needs, the opportunities to go further with the finding aids, making sure that the finding aids that exist as catalog records actually get online as encoded archival description online ones so that the visibility is enhanced. And then the next phase is to take existing print inventories of those collections and append them to the existing finding aids so that people can really get an idea about what the snapshot into that box is. What do these collections look like? What are the intellectual contents, and what do these things contain? So to that end, I've begun scanning a lot of foreign print inventories and putting them in a folder that eventually we're going to embed on the website.
You used a term I'm not familiar with. Could you talk about what daylighting is?
Oh, well, I was sort of – I'm not sure if this is necessarily an archive-specific term, but the way I'm using it is collections that in the transition between – library catalog, which is a mostly back-end interface that is seen by our internal department but isn't necessarily public, at least all the information. Many of the records do exist in the library catalog, but didn't necessarily make the leap into online finding aids. There was a mass migration a few years ago, a grant-funded project, and they did a great job in getting all of them there. So at least almost every single collection has at least a preliminary stub of a finding aid. Sometimes it just says the collection name, the date ranges, and the volume. And it doesn't have any inventory, and it may not have the arrangement description or the creation context or any of that information. But it's still a great placeholder for what could be expanded upon. Some of them didn't make the leap. And so I was identifying about 29 or so collections that there was an opportunity to migrate forward. And I'm doing daylighting in that sense to make sure that they're in a format and a manifestation that is much easier for users to seek information in that may not be visible to them usually. You know, it's particularly important because I'm really striving for a model to appeal to both seasoned researchers in labor history, but also people who are actually members of the labor movement who may not necessarily have experience working in archival repositories. I'm trying to decrease the dependence on mediated access in terms of always needing an archivist or a reference archivist to give them access to their records. I'm hoping to put a lot of this stuff online so that people can really get a sense of what the collections are themselves. And another really interesting aspect of that, a project that's going forward, is within the digital projects and special collections, we're digitizing an awful lot of new labor records. Right now, there's 620 new images that have been added to the digital collections, and that's not necessarily discrete documents. Some of them are images that make up documents. But ultimately, what's going to happen is there's going to be a dedicated labor portal for the digital collections, which, once again, will really help daylight these things. And even though we don't have the resources to digitize entire collections, it's going to serve as sort of a movie poster. Hey, that's an interesting document, whatever. And then we have the link to the finding aid, so which will hopefully drive researchers deeper into the collection and be one other point of access for people to be able to reach our collections.
So daylighting actually does mean dragging things that have been hidden in darkness into the light.
Yeah. And, you know, part of that also is taking the caveat that even though it's daylighting to the external public, you know, I think there's an attitude sometimes in the outer community that, you know, quote unquote, we lose things or things are lost. We don't lose things, but this is really an opportunity to make them more visible to the external community and really prove that, you know, the value that archivists and information professionals add to these things is creating the tools and the pathways to meet information seekers where they live, you know, not just making them negotiate our own kind of arcane networks of stuff, but figure out how they're trying to find these collections. And, you know, they're actually going to be redesigning the special collections website soon, including the labor archives pages. And I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to do that. I've also got a live guide up, which is a way a lot of the internal audience of undergrad researchers, I think, primarily seek different, you know, subject guides. So I'm hoping to channel them that way too.
That's some interesting stuff. Are you going through and digitizing any of the older works, or is that something that's going to have to wait until later when there's more funding?
How do you mean, the older works?
Some of the things that are were born on paper, and some of the things that are possibly even nearing the end of their life cycle on acidic paper substances.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So sort of the retrospective digitization type stuff, there's one angle where we're really doing the inventories and the finding aids, the sort of tools to the collections, the guides to the collections, we're doing that. The digitization of different things tends to not be necessarily format-based or preservation-based, although that is an added benefit to it. It tends to be topically oriented. I worked with the digital projects folks with a selective criteria that was based on different secondary sources in the labor history of the region, different events, things that I know that are popular topics for researchers. And in that way, we sort of crafted a strategy to target different collections around topics, events, certain eras, and significant trends that we want to document. In that sense, we were sort of digitizing around ideas, around not necessarily having a division between collections, but going across collections around particular events, you know.
That's a wonderful way of working it, because that's how they would be trying to access the information. I mean, you'd be interested in a particular strike or a particular company or a particular event that happens around the totalitarity of labor.
You know, in a sense, what it does is it sort of mirrors the way people would do historical research. You know, you're calling in all those different voices to your research and really presenting a case that uses multiple perspectives to recreate a story or make an argument. In that sense, we're sort of creating a topically oriented exhibit almost that is just around a particular topic. And in a way, what we're doing is we're using the documentary history that is included in the archives, multiple formats, multiple collections, and multiple creators to almost, it serves almost as multiple cameras on an event. We get different perspectives on the same thing. And it's really an exciting, once again, you know, it's exciting that the Labor Archives is housed within Special Collections, because then you get those different perspectives. And yeah, it's kind of an exciting opportunity, I think.
Okay. Well, thanks for, Connor, thanks for coming down and talking with us today. I'll edit out my mental typo there. Got a good friend named Colin, so his name creeps into anything that begins with a hard consonant. Connor, thank you very much for coming down and talking with us today, and I wish you luck. What would be the best portal to reach the work you're doing right now through the web?
Well, if you go onto the library website, you'll see in the lower right-hand side of the page, on the front page of the library's website, it says Special Collections. And then if you look in the, about the second square down on that page, there's the Labor Archives of Washington State, and there you'll find a description of the project, all the different exhibits and events we have going on, the labor collections listing, and there's also resources on local unions on how to keep labor records, more of a records management strategy. And, you know, just as a side note, we're definitely trying to recruit information school students. This is a volunteer and student-powered project as much as it is, you know, an archivist-powered one. And it's really due to the interest of a lot of volunteers that have already been volunteering the project that we've gotten so much done in such a short amount of time.
Would this be an opportunity for library school students to pursue a directed field work?
Absolutely. Not only I know that the opportunities in the iSchool to get hands-on manuscript processing experience are vary at different times. This would be an opportunity to do that. It would also be an opportunity to sort of pitch projects. I mean, I'm quite open to different ways to enhance the discoverability of the collections, different ways to try to highlight it. And there's also many opportunities for collaborations that sort of draw on these collections, but presented in different ways. You know, I'm open to a lot of these different means, because outreach is really a central part of my strategy for fundraising and to it's part of my mandate. So anybody who can help out with that, I'm willing to work with them. Thank you again for having me back on the podcast. It's exciting to be able to update you after 6 months of on the job, and I hope to be back sometime in the future if you'll have me.
I'll be very willing to do that. Connor, thank you again for coming
back.
Thank
you.
This podcast is a 2011 production of the Silverfish Audio Studios and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 Unported license. You can pass it around, you can mix it up, but you gotta say where you got it. It is not intended to offend anyone who maintains current access to Attack Lawyers. All music by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.